He was here last meeting. So I have seen all of it change dramatically in 15 years. So I'm just invested, and so I'm
here on the 12th of December.
Calling the meeting to order. We don't have cake. He's on the reach. Get us going eventually.
Okay. And did you used to be the boss?
Well, it ain't been a long time, so I forgot.
But she's already
scared.
Well,
I'm back to you. Hey, how are you?
Hey, nice to
meet you. Good morning.
All right.
Well, this time's a waste of time. Oh, no. Today.
She is?
Oh, here.
Where's, what's her name? She's on her
back. Yeah, let's back well.
Alrighty. Welcome everyone to the CPARP meeting today on October 15th, 2024. And let's go ahead and have a call, a roll call, please.
Jaime Tadeo.
Present.
Annabelle Nunez.
Present.
Kate Calhoun.
Present.
Carlos Portillo.
Present.
Let me see how.
I'm here.
And I will ask for a approval of the legal action report and minutes from the September 17, 2024 meeting. Anything to discuss on the minutes?
I will make a motion to approve the bar and the minutes.
I second the motion.
Roll call, please.
I'm Jaime Tadeo.
Let me know.
Annabelle Nunez? Yes,
aye.
Pete Calhoun?
Aye.
Carlos Portillo?
Aye.
And Nancy Hubbard?
Aye, if I'm allowed to vote on that.
For the record, Carlos and Nancy are still do not have voting until their training's done.
Yep.
Mitch will keep us updated.
All right.
So we're now on item number 3, which is a report from the chairperson, information on the rule. Madam Chair.
Thank you. At this time, I do not have anything to report. So we'll go on to item number 4, call to the audience.
Office didn't receive any anybody who wanted to speak, or and nobody's present.
Okay. Terrific. Woo. Actually, can I back up? I do have something to report. Okay, sorry, I forgot. So I did complete the training documents that Annabelle had sent over to me. So I've got all of training hours for most of us. I sent you all blind copied on the training schedule. So if you CPARP members can take a look at that, let me know if I need to make any updates to the training programs. And I spoke with Mitch about our tenure and our sunset date. So I've got that on the document as well. And then, Renee, I sent that over to you. And then the other thing that we need to talk about is the we've got a report to the boards and commissions with the city of Tucson where we're meeting. Who schedules the meeting location with Ward 6?
It's a weekend. Me and like Andrea or Danny Garcia.
Okay.
Schedule it wherever you decide to meet.
So do I need to put this on the agenda to ask if you want to continue to meet here, the CPAR board? Do I need to put that on the agenda for approval?
I think it's your decision.
No.
I'm not sure you need to vote for that.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to get feedback.
More of like a courtesy.
I'd like to get. Is everyone comfortable with voting or with meeting here?
Yep.
Okay. All right, then we will go to Ward 6. If you could, please go to Ward 6 to ask if we can continue to meet here next year.
Okay, I think we're scheduled out to December,
and then we'll have to call them and reschedule the room for the same date. Hang on the same date, everything.
It's just before.
Well, I know, but I just wanted to get consensus with the rest of the gang. So, and that works for PD as well, I suspect.
Third Tuesday, 5:30.
Okay. Yes. Okay. All right. Sorry about that. I just had to settle, and now I remembered what I need to speak about. Okay. So I'll complete the form and send that back into the boards and commissions. So item number 5, I know we're going out of order here, so I apologize. It's a review of TPD investigations, and in accordance with Section 10A-88F of the Mayor Council mandate, the board may only review those charges specified in the investigation in order to comment on the fairness and thoroughness of the internal investigation and to report any concerns regarding that investigation to those specified in the mandate. So item or case number 23-0280, and this occurred in Operation West Division, and the allegation was use of force. And the gentleman indicated that the officer used excessive force on him while investigating, during an investigation involving his girlfriend on August 10th, 2023.
Well, I will start by saying I think this one was pretty straightforward. There was a lot of cameras, a lot of angles. I just want to say I think the officers on site were doing a really good job and, you know, continuing to try to keep the situation de-escalated. The girlfriend was super sensitive and there was a lot going on there. But in regards to the young man that was the boyfriend who came over, I think, you know, he just wouldn't comply with the order to back up. I do have a question regarding sort of what constitutes a fist, because I think that was sort of in there. And, I mean, I think that some of that pretty commonly gesture of, like, grabbing the crotch area almost and sort of, you know, it's pretty common, almost like it's almost a known bite. Is that constitute, like, that's a threat gesture now?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the officers did a good job at articulating all of the behaviors that were associated with the boyfriend that approached him. He was yelling. When I saw his arm go up in the air, he was starting to step forward. The officers told him to move back multiple times. I think all of those factors together were like, okay, we need to make sure this doesn't start physically.
Okay, so it's just a culmination of the different behaviors that you spot. Because, I mean, I know that that's like, you know, you're getting ready to throw down kind of thing, but that's like, that's new schoolish type of stuff.
Yeah, and you know, in his defense, I mean, it's hard to watch someone you care about on the ground with police officers, and that totally get that. But as I watched the video, I was thinking, okay, he's starting to get really agitated with the officers.
Yeah, in the same vein, the officer showed a tremendous amount of restraint, patience. I was just beside myself, but he would not say. He was creating his own problem, obviously, and he wouldn't stop. And I didn't need a fist. If I was a police officer, I don't know what you need. I don't know if a fist is required, but I wouldn't have needed a fist in this instance to tell him to back up and stop and get in the car. And I would have closed the door a lot sooner than that officer did, because he would not stop. He was killing me. So they showed a great amount of restraint.
Kate, it's Nancy down here. This is the first case I've reviewed since I left in 2019. And back then, 2016 to 2019, when I was on the board, occasionally somebody would have a BWC. So when I was opening up this material and wanting to get kind of prepared for tonight, there were 10 officers named that all had BWC information on it. I opened up quite a few. Some were just in the hospital only because there was a shift change, it seemed. But for going forward, so my question is, to review this case, granted I'm retired and I have more time than some of you working folks, but 2.5 hours per times 10, perhaps. How do you, or how would you advise me? I went to Montoya first because I saw that the complaint really had to be, was mostly with, Officer Montoya. So his were on the bottom actually of my list. So I went to his first, but how would you advise me going forward when now we have so much VWC information, where to go, what to do?
So the way that I review a case, I review the written documentation first. I then follow up with the BWC of the officers that have been named. And I will then skim the others. I do look at them, but I will skim them. You can see and you can actually fast forward because sometimes the BWC includes traveling the vehicle, God bless you, with no voice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll skim that to kind of shorten the length of it.
Okay. Well, that's pretty much what I did. I read, went to Montoya, and then hopped through some of the others. So, I guess I'm doing okay.
And in fairness, as we are evaluating, you know, I would certainly read the documentation and then watch the BWC. And then you will also get training on body worn camera. How, you know, maybe this one angle is not representing the entire picture. So, you know, you're pretty intuitive. So I would actually look at, your intuitiveness if you needed to go further and reviewing the other body worn camera videos.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Thanks. Great.
I do have a question regarding that. I mean, would it be expected to have all the other body-worn camera footage in that case of the woman in the hospital or where she was being detained in the medical facility? I mean, that kind of didn't make sense to me. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
When we get a complaint of excessive force or those types of things, we grab all that information and centralize it in the file. So it's all there.
Okay. Thank you.
This one in particular had a lot of body-worn camera video, and, you know, during my tenure here, I don't think I've seen that many, and you'll see in the next two cases there were no.
Yes.
Body-worn camera video.
I noticed that.
Kind of like, ooh, good.
I know. I was like, ooh, this is good.
Yes.
But I do have to say I enjoyed watching the body-worn camera because I had the pleasure of being in the wrap myself for one of the training.
Yeah. No ants.
So, yeah. So it's interesting. And
it's spooky.
I certainly hope you enjoy going through the class over at Celetzi and the body-worn camera if it's evolved since you were going through you were on CPART prior.
When it was very new.
Yeah.
Very new before the budgeting allowed for all the officers to have cameras.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's very important these days for sure.
And I suspect you're going to see the wrap on November 8th at the training. I know a few of you won't be there, but a few of you will. So if you haven't seen a wrap before, I suspect you'll see it on that thing.
I won't be there to model it, though.
Be the good patient.
But I do recommend you actually take advantage if you can't get into it. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So on there, I don't have my notes. I forgot them. But there was a page that it said that it was up to the officer's discretion not to arrest the individual.
Yeah.
I didn't find any place as to why that was. So he was placed in handcuffs, but then he was not charged.
Yeah.
Is that because of that situation did not involve him at the time, or what was the officer's discretion?
Yeah, so there's very few violations that the officers are mandated to make arrests. One of those would be domestic violence, that they're mandated to make a full custody arrest in the book. In this particular case, once they got the individual in handcuffs and got the situation calmed down, they felt the best thing to do was remove the arrestee from the situation and essentially dust them off, for lack of better terms.
Thank you. Well, I moved for case number 23-0280 to be fair and thorough.
I'll second that.
Okay. I'm Mitchell Hill.
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez.
Aye.
And Keith Calhoun.
Aye. Okay, so item number two is case number 23-0328. And this was somebody who had called in indicating the motorcyclist, PD officer, was driving recklessly around on Orange Grove.
But no emergency lights.
Yes, no emergency lights on.
One where he was looking in the windows and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was weird.
Any comments?
And I think it was pretty insignificant, but the fact that there's like a paper trail demonstrating like following up very specifically on the complaint, I think it was pretty clear.
Agreed. I think this one was super straightforward. I mean, at least we have community members who are sort of just staying on the lookout. So I guess you can appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, I recently went to, honestly, I wasn't paying attention because I didn't care for it, but I was placed there at work for tabling, and there was this group of three people who were just like constantly bashing the Tucson Police Department and police in general. And I kind of got a sense from this person who made the complaint about just like trying to stir something up, trying to get attention for something.
In this particular case or just in general?
Just in this case.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I just got that same kind of feeling mm-hmm. on like I saw something, I'm going to say something and like probably make a thing out of it. I don't know. But there are some people. I mean, the way that this panel, people are just talking about creating their own like police force made up community members and organizing themselves to like not call police. I mean, I get it, but like it just made no sense.
Well, it's a waste of resources, right? Like engaging when there's no need to engage.
I just got a feeling, but I did. I mean, based on like the fair and thoroughness, I mean, it was pretty thorough.
Is
my humble opinion.
Well, I will make a motion to find case number 23-0328 fair and thorough. Yes, there's one more.
A second.
I'm Mitadio.
Hi.
Annabelle Munoz.
Hi.
And
Kate Calhoun. All right. So case third case is 23-0385. Something very similar, no body worn camera, and apparently this officer refused to give the complainant their badge number when asked. He or she was in vehicle number 628. Yes.
I think that was really good work. Detective work, if you will, to get all the details sorted out.
Sorry.
And to find out who was actually driving the vehicle. And our wonderful IPA did a lot of work to clarify those details. Thank you, sir. And working with the customer or the complainant in this case to just, you know, affirm that, that it was the location. And, you know, who he asked for the badge and their name and whatnot. It seems like it was, he was sort of kind of fixated on an old call and for service and like
yeah.
No call, nobody yeah. showed up,
thank
right?
You.
So, yeah.
It's good. I guess he gets a lot of stuff there.
Yeah.
My question, I had, it was just kind of weird. Had Bargood or Mitch, I don't know who received the pictures. Had no one received the pictures, would we know who the two officers were? Would we know today? Had no pictures been sent in, we wouldn't know who it was.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Yeah, you would not know. It's way too difficult to do that. I mean,
I get that. I understand that there's I don't know how many cars. I mean, I used to manage just, 40, and it was a freaking headache.
Yeah.
But I just was like confused because I'm like, nobody knows who was driving that car. And it wasn't his car, it wasn't the other guy's car, or however it worked. And that car's out on its own for all intents and purposes. And thank God the guy, kind of thank God, he had pictures. And now these two gentlemen were verbally reprimanded, right?
Something of great consequence.
I guess that's my point.
And TPD, and certainly I would be pushing for a whole lot more, but the energy suck for something like that.
It was just an immense amount of work for
who's on, where they were, looking at their calls, and looking at GPS. So it's possible, and I've seen them do that before, but for something of this nature, thank goodness I agree.
It's so much work, if it's like, geez.
And there's verbal counseling, which is always a nice reminder, right?
Anyways.
With no impunity.
Okay, so let's say that there's no pictures, and that was one of my questions, actually. Thank you for bringing that up. So there was the one statement that said that the vehicle was not logged in at that specific time.
Yeah.
Without the pictures, how would the investigation move forward?
So fortunately, there's a lot of stuff attached to a cop that tracks them, like cell phones, laptops. Anytime they activate the body worn cameras, it pings the location. So they can start digging through additional data.
As far as like officers' names and badges, on the 2-minute mark, anytime a person's talking to an officer, do they need to turn it on, even if it's not for a specific call and they're just refueling gas?
So the body worn camera policy is anytime they're dispatched to a level, level one or level two at the time of dispatch. Sorry, level one at the time of dispatch, because typically that's lights and sirens, so they flip it on. Anytime they're interacting with a community member attempting to develop either probable cause or reasonable suspicion, an investigatory stop. And then the last one is anytime they're interacting with a community member, it's part of a contact and it becomes adversarial for some reason. We see that a lot with the auditors that try to provoke somebody. So those are the three triggers which it's supposed to go on.
When I first saw this case, I thought it was like the TikTok trend of that one person going to officers and ask for their badge name. But I saw it was like from 2023. I don't think it's related. It's my dreams.
I'll make a motion.
Anything on that end?
No, if you could speak up just a little bit, I'm having a hard time hearing you down here. I'm sorry.
I'll try.
I'll
speak loud. If I do, I'm yelling.
Okay.
Yeah, it hurts.
we can figure
it out. Put him in the middle.
Well, I'm happy to.
Tony's out there.
Say it.
Artoal.
I'm happy to put forward a motion for case number 23-0385 to be deemed fair and thorough.
I second.
I'm Italia. Keith Calhoun.
Aye.
Madalena.
Aye.
So item number 6, Tucson Police Department, in accordance with the provisions of the state open public meeting law, these items listed on the agenda are in order to allow TPD to present brief summary of current events pursuant to provisions ARS section 38431.02. The board may not propose, discuss, deliberate, or take action at this meeting or on the matter in the updates unless specific matter is properly noticed for legal action at subsequent meeting. A, TPD updates regarding developments related during TPD this prior month.
I'm Jimmy Wakefield. I'm covering for Chief Shainer. And I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just going to read off some of the stuff she sent me.
provide you folks. Stacy is currently taking a leadership course, a police leadership course at the University of Chicago. So she does 3 weeks here in town and then 1 week actually at the University of Chicago. So this happens to be her week there. During next month meeting, she'll be there as well, but she'll be back in December. Looking forward to sitting down with you guys. We have a lot of changes in command, specifically in patrol. We have a new Ops Midtown captain, Captain Kidd. We have a new West captain, Captain Lauren Petty, and a new South captain, Captain Dominic Flores. So they're just kind of feeling their way through the process here. Captain Flores has been a captain for a couple of years, but the other two are newly promoted. I think in the July update, we talked to you about we created a second community response team on the department. So what that does is community response team is a group of officers that work in a squad. Typically, they work as plainclothes officers. So that gives them a lot of latitude to do surveillance operations. They can purchase narcotics. They can even purchase guns. So they can do some of those responses to problem drug houses, you know, those sorts of things, street racing events, a lot of those things that flash up and need to be dealt with. So we now have seven day a week coverage with the second community response team. So we're using them for downtown violence reduction on the weekends, street racing deployments, takeovers, also party patrols. What we found is sometimes when we allow parties to fester into the late hours, sometimes it can turn into a shooting or other act of violence, gun violence. So we're trying to get in front of that before it turns into that situation. Then the last update is we're doing a regional active assailant training. We're working with other local agencies. It's an 8-hour instruction-based and scenario-based training. Essentially, it's showing police or refresher training on how we deal with active shooters or active killer situations. So it's, I haven't been to it yet. I'm going next week, but it's supposed to be very good training. Those are all the department updates.
Great. Thank you. Office of Professional Standards update?
Just a couple things, and I'm sure the judge is going to talk about it, but we were able to have a couple of internal affairs investigators attend the NACOL conference, the Civilian Oversight Conference with the judge. So they're there this week getting some good training and networking. We also have one new investigator coming into the office. He will be there full-time next month, but he's one day a week got in training with us to get his feet wet.
Well, I had another opportunity to see you all in action at the Waltz event, so I know it's been difficult, so thank you all very much. I know you're spread thin, these political events taking its toll on you, but it's nice to see you all in action, and sorry you're kind of probably behind on your regular job. I cannot get you into Barack Obama. Yeah. Sorry, it's not at the TCC.
I was going to ask Patrick.
Yeah, it's not at the TCC. I don't know if it's been made public. Has it been made public?
Not yet. Huh? I didn't think so. Well, he hasn't called me, let's put it that way.
Okay.
You can probably go. We covered your cases.
So
they covered your cases already.
So. Oh, okay.
This is Lieutenant Archibald.
Sorry to be late, everybody. I'm Lieutenant Tony Archibald. I just took over command of the department's air support and traffic services section. I took the place of now Captain Lauren Petty, if you've seen her before. So I have overall supervision of our motorcycle enforcement unit, our DUI enforcement unit, our traffic investigation squads, our mobile field force, our rapid response team, our helicopter, and our hostage negotiation yet. So just a couple things on my plate. I do apologize for being late for the meeting this evening. I've actually been at the TCC all day assessing our candidates for our lieutenant's promotional process. And so today we saw four potential lieutenants come in and be assessed on their ability to perform the job. But tomorrow we'll do six more.
Sorry, your husband was one of those that attended the...
Oh, really? Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It's been a long day.
How did he do?
Yeah. Great
question.
Yeah, how did he do?
Oh, for the integrity of the process, we need to... So I had the cases assigned to Officer DeBenedetti, had a speeding issue on his motorcycle. And then Officer Santa Maria and Officer Weiberg, if I were to identify. So I know that you guys have already spoke about that. If you had any follow-up questions or anything like that, since I'm here, I'm happy to ask and answer.
Straightforward cases, yeah.
True album.
Yep. That's
cool. Great.
Great pick, man.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet all of you. So thank you very much for having me. And again, I apologize for my tardiness.
Thanks. Thank you, Lieutenant.
Go rest. Do it all again tomorrow.
Somebody needs a good grade. Okay, so item number 7, Office of Independent Police Officer, Auditor, excuse me. That would be you.
That would be me. All right, well, first of all, most important thing of all, the Yankees are in the middle of the fourth and are up 3-0.
Tell me again, what is it?
3-0, Yankees are up in the middle of the fourth. This is game 2 in the playoffs, and I'm here. So
go Mets.
Yeah. A couple quick things. There are two new captains this year. It might be a good idea to either extend an invitation or Captain Wakefield maybe to pass along to have them come down, introduce themselves, see what CPARB is. As a captain, they head up the substation, and when people call and they need help, they're referred to that substation for help. And certainly a person that oversees that, I think, should be aware of community needs and what this board is all about. So I would suggest that strongly. NACOL, this year is here. NACOL is National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement. It's an international group. It deals with not just law enforcement anymore. It's half of the conference that's going on right now involves correctional institutions. That's a brand new field, and as you can imagine, the resistance, if you've seen enough Paul Newman movies and whatnot, you're aware of a prison, how welcoming they can be. All right. NACOL started off yesterday, and it's going to end Thursday afternoon. It opened with the opening remarks from Chief Kazmar, and he went in, and he did a really good job. And as you would expect, I'm sure, talked about a healthy relationship between civilian oversight and Tucson Police Department, current state of affairs, investing in the future. Talked about forward thinking, and you can really see that. And I'd love for you guys to go to the next one's going to be, unfortunately, next year, Minneapolis, Minnesota. You may not. Well, we slept all the way out there. But,
the weather's right.
Yeah. So, but, you know, there are tracks like, talking about riot control, crowd control, talking about mental health, and they're suggesting things like, you know, they should have specialized training and have the equipment and under crowd control, and you should have standards. TPD already does that. So about mental health and investing in the law enforcement side of mental health, TPD already knows that. Talked about establishing community relationships. TPD is really good at that. I mean, I'm not a police groupie. That's not my place here. But, you know, when props are due. That's kind of how I'm looking at it. And invariably, people go up and they say, you know, how do we have that? How do we develop that relationship with our local law enforcement agencies? And it takes a while. It's a new culture. It takes a change in thinking and having the guts to make some changes, certainly from the police side. Tucson is not as hot an area as sometimes you'll find, maybe, say, in Baltimore, and quite frankly, in Phoenix. Awful lot of discussion about what's going on in Phoenix. From the DOJ, they came out to talk, and they talked about consent decrees. It's very expensive what they're going through, and it's a shakeup, and it's sad, but it needed it. That's what the consent decree is all about. So there are plenty of similar community boards that are at this convention conference, and again, international. Jamaica's there, Mexico's there. Not sure if Philippines is there this year. From everywhere, small places and big places, small oversight bodies and huge oversight bodies. Oversight bodies, for example, in San Francisco, the chief of police can't make a promotion without clearing of the board or get his budget passed without board clearance. CCRB in New York is they have banks of attorneys on their oversight board. Some do direct investigations, some do not. So there is no one set standard for oversight. It depends on what your community's needs are, and that also means how much money you want to invest in something like this. You know, one or two people is certainly going to be different organizationally than the 40 people. So, but it is interesting. And a lot of the boards have, and you guys do a great job. I mean, compared to what I hear from some of these other boards, and it's great to see this many people here. And they talk about board training and how important that is. That's going to be a topic for tomorrow. And just next month, on November 9th, we're starting to set up that board training. I want to get Andrea Cola's, what you're seeing is not really what you think you're seeing. Somebody mentioned that. So that needs to be on there. I want to put everything on one day, because then if you miss that one day, you miss a lot. So this way, if we split it up a little bit, I think more people will be able to take advantage. But boards have, some boards have to fight to see records. They send them to you. There's a share drive, push the button. So sometimes it's a pain in the neck to access it. But, you know, the TPD's here and shares with you that you can ask TPD, bring us some training. There are a lot of agencies that are, you know, butting heads and you ask a cop to do something. And that guy, the union, forget it. He's like the enemy in a lot of these board meetings. So it really is remarkable. It really is. So I'm thrilled to see so many of you here, and you're going to get some of that training, and hopefully we can get some more going. But anybody have any questions for me?
Rich, I don't have a question, but I do want to say, since I was on the board 2016 to 19, and we didn't have any training, and now I'm required to do a whole lot of the training. It's really valuable, you know, and again, luckily I'm retired and I had the time to do it, and so it's not crippling me. But it's really insightful, and the psychological and emotional training that recruits have to go through. I mean, I've started doing the take four breaths in, hold it for four, exhale for four. So much of it is now more valuable to me, and I think, you know, I'll probably be better on it, hopefully, on this board after having to go through all of these many hours of reading all the material and taking the quizzes. So, as you're saying, I think what we're doing here in Tucson, again, I don't know what they're doing around the country or the world, but it's a pretty awesome job.
I think, I agree. The information's great. As a matter of fact, when the 60-hour computerized component was put together by TPD, they said, well, there's more stuff that's very important. So it's actually more than 60, and it didn't need to be, but it was information that they felt was important. So you've got that too. I forget her name. She heads up the police accountability office up in Maricopa County. She had the same experience I did. That 80-hour program, and I've said this before, and I don't care who's listening, but it was, in my opinion, put together to destroy a civilian oversight. It was absolutely put together so this would not exist. To try to get somebody to say, I'm going to do 80 hours before I'm allowed to do anything, and it's all volunteer, it's a tough sell. So thank you, really, for y'all willing to do that. But she's also of that opinion, that's what the purpose was. I listened to the arguments in subcommittee, and it was real clear. who was making the argument, and I'm real clear what that was about. Similarly, they passed the proviso that has to be provided to every complainant, whether it's online or whether they call it in, that advises them that any false reporting can be charged as a criminal offense. And it gives a little bit of detail, but people aren't sophisticated to understand what intentional means. And intentional has to be satisfied for false reporting to be charged. So if you're making a complaint and maybe you just got it wrong, you remembered it wrong, there's nothing intentional. There would be a charge. So I know that's explained by the investigators at OPS, and I think that's a great thing that they do that. They explain that intentionality, but they're not getting that explanation online when they go to do a form. So again, my opinion, based on my observations, was also done to dissuade people from making complaints. That's what you see in Maricopa County. That's why there is a consent decree. That's why they're having problems. We don't have that here. You know, and again, their officers explain that when they deal with people. So I think we have a really good thing going here. And if sometimes you get frustrated and don't believe it, go to an APOL conference and listen and observe. It's real clear. It really is clear. So anyway, enough of that. I'm going to get grumpy again.
Well, and I just, you know, echo what you say, Mitch, because I was privileged to go 2 years ago, and Mitch worked with the city or whatever did his magic to be able to waive the fees, right, the registration.
Correct.
And, I mean, just to hear people ask me a ton of questions about, you know, how we function and whatnot, it just reminded you how you shouldn't take this board for granted, that the city shouldn't take this board for granted, that TPD shouldn't take the board for granted, because I really do. I mean, I've been to Phoenix and I've had encounters with police and they're just not, I mean, not to generalize, but I mean, I'm like, really? You're going to make a situation out of that? Just watching the engagement with community. And I'm like, oh my God, we're very lucky. So I just wanted to reiterate, you know, maybe one day they'll build it into the board being able to attend the NACLs. You know, or at least the chair, because it's very valuable what we bring back.
Something occurred to me, just for specifics about what you just said. The DOJ, Department of Justice, goes out and does the investigation, and they come up with a finding. And they basically say, you're going to agree or we're going to sue you. This is what they're saying. and so they agree. So there's a finding. There's a report that details a lot of this stuff. It's not massive, but it's out there. How can we get this to, can this be just distributed? How do you suggest we do this? I'm asking Renee.
You can send it to us and we can distribute it to the commission.
Let me just make copies and bring it in?
That, or you can email it and I can email it on just blind copy the commission so there's no.
Okay. And y'all okay getting that online? Because you should see that. You should see what they found. And it's not just, you know, my personal experience. I look at what's going on in Arnold there. And there was a chief of police that's no longer there. And I know NACOL, two representatives went up there at the request of the Phoenix board to talk about civilian oversight. And they were shot down. At that time, they said, oh, we like our police. We don't need civilian oversight. Well, look where you are now. And it's not, you know, bumping heads. It's checks and balances. You know, they're happy to have me because I can make them and explain to you how they're doing a good job. So they're happy, and then I can be happy knowing that, and the community can be happy with this accountability as well. So it's a symbiotic relationship. It doesn't have to be hostile. And the government officials at that time in Phoenix did not understand that. They refused to understand it. We like our police. Well, look where you are now. And you have to spend your own money for that. And those federal monitors get like $750 an hour.
Wow.
So whatever that is, it's insane. Well, you know, again, being progressive, being willing to listen and learn and work together goes a long way. And I'm pleased to say I believe that's a Tucson experience.
That sort of moment in time when it was like, okay, this is all by design. to break up the committee to really, I mean, and we, I feel like we were on life support. I mean, I was on TV trying to recruit. You and I would meet people at coffee shops and really try to recruit people. And it was like, you know, this training is meant to dismantle this board. And I think there was that hesitancy, too, that it's like, well, how training, what's the purpose of training the community when you want the community to come in with their own perspective and not building a bias by training? But I think, you know, a couple years in now with the training under my belt, it eliminates some real basic and fundamental things that I think is very important to know to be able to sit and review these cases. So, anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, yes. So item number 8, Sergeant Husman, you're going to give us a presentation on the National Crisis Intervention event that you went to a couple months ago.
Yeah, when we say presentation, let's...
You're going to tell us.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like I have...
We're going to just walk you through.
So a few weeks ago, I attended the Crisis Intervention Training International. It was in Indianapolis, Indiana, about 1,900 participants, 17 to 1,900 participants. I think they had 5 different countries there. And basically it is bringing mental health awareness and all the stuff that comes with it, the comorbidity, homelessness, drug abuse, all those things in underneath one umbrella, and then how communities can come together and police departments and, like, basically tell you in the beginning, you can't arrest out mental illness. Like, you can't arrest it away from someone. What was kind of amazing is kind of like what the judge was speaking about is going there and talking and seeing what other agencies across the nation are going through. They're like, we truly are here in this community, the tip of the spear. Like, we are so forward thinking. Like, they're talking about how do we get a place to where we can have a quick drop off for people that are suffering from mental illness. Right now, there's one agency we were talking to. Their officer has to drive 3 hours to get to a hospital that will take him. And then on average, he waits 8 to 12 hours before he'll be seen. And then he's got 3 hours. So one call is a shift killer. Like, he's out for the whole entire time. We have it to where they pride it on within, I think, 30 minutes is what the standard is over at CRC for us to be back in the field. So, I mean, we're above there. The fact that we have co-responders, so we have clinicians ride with officers or even have that phone call away, is mind-blowing to a lot of the rest of the nation. Like, how do you guys do this? To have the fact that we're able to sit down and have meetings with COOP, CODAC, La Frontera, law enforcement, and those agencies coming together for the betterment of the individual blows people's minds away. Like, I was like, should we just come up here and talk and let you guys know that it's possible? Because there's a lot of stuff that we'll never have that accomplished here. That will never be done here. And I'm sure I wasn't here for that, but I'm assuming that was also set here at this city with the community and law enforcement. But it's all about building the bridges and making sure that awareness and trust and just bringing things together. So there's a lot of discussion of, like, what the future looks like. And we're like, in a lot of ways, Tucson and the Tucson community is the future. And that's why we are with the BJA, we are a learning site. So agencies follow the nation come here. But through there, they talked about identification of opioid abuse. And then another big thing that was a lot more dominant this year was officer wellness and kind of looking within. We already have a struggle well program to where we're going through and focusing on what taking care of the officers, as opposed to always thinking about taking care of the community. It's like, we need to make sure that we're all inside. So, and again, we already have that. We've had it in place. So it was just kind of an amazing time to see how grateful and lucky we are to live here and see how all the things come together. So that's a quick overview. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy to stay after if there's more in-depth questions, but sorry, it wasn't much, but it just reconfirmed that we are 100% leading the way. And so, like, there's some people like, hey, we just got a clinician, and everyone's like, oh my, this is amazing. I'm like, I think we did that like 7 years ago.
That's just wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to be a big deal, but here's some of the growing pains you're going to go through. Be careful of this and this and this. And so it was truly exciting and invigorating to know that we're working at, not only for a department that's willing to take chances and also that the community is willing to come together for the betterment of everyone. It's not, everyone's not in silos. We come together. So it's great. So that's all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have a personal thing. Lee, who gave the presentation last month, from community, safety, wellness, I got in touch with her because I chair a meeting here once a month. It's called the Fifth Alvin Non-Crime Coalition with Lieutenant Brian Corcoran. It used to be Tony De La Osa until they moved him downtown. We've been doing it for, I think, over 2 years now. We meet once a month, and it's neighborhoods, Miramonte, which is this neighborhood, my neighborhood, which is Peter Howell. We've also now expanded to Duffy, Highland Vista. We've got El Encanto people coming, El Conquistador people come, Poets Square, we've just invited them, Swanway. Anyway, we have a whole bunch of these Ward 6 Midtown neighborhoods. And we come and we sit here, and Lieutenant Brian and I listen to the people who take the time to come here. So we let everybody speak. And it's almost always constantly the same thing. Alvernon Park at 5th and Alvernon, Miramonte Park, which is right here. It's the same crew of people. So last week, we've been having the same crew because if any of you know Faith Lutheran Church, which is at 5th and Alvernon almost, our Alvernon Park, because I live there, has been their playground because they don't have any room on their campus for the kids to play. They're not able to go there anymore because of the people that just are there 24/7. So I've gotten really frustrated. We had Brandy Champion and Justin Hamilton come because Lee passed the buck kind of to them. So they came and presented to the meeting a week after our CPARB meeting. They came and the neighbors were thrilled to hear from them, excited to hear from them. And Justin came, Environmental Services came, Officer Herrera came. We had the troops there last week. And they were cleaned out for a day. Yeah. And now they're all just back hanging at our park. The families are calling me saying, we're afraid to go to the park because there's going to be fentanyl tinfoil and we found needles. And the people are using the drinking fountain as their shower and contaminating it. Anyway, you've heard this. I hear it every month. Now for a couple of years, and we don't know where to go. And then frustration today, I sent another email out to Justin and Brandy and Karen here and everybody and Steve Kozajic, because we're still friends. And I just said, well, where do we go? What do we do? So where do we go? What do we do? It's not, as Brian says every month, it's not illegal to be in the park during 6 a.m. till 10:30 p.m. But all their stuff is still there. Yeah, they might scurry away when they see a car coming. So where do we go? What do we do?
Well, I think, you know, law enforcement is just one cog in the wheel.
Sure. Right?
I mean, we are there for the enforcement, and we have all these other avenues to make sure that we can provide positive wraparound services and not just arrest, but also make sure they get mental health treatment and that. But then it's looking at your community providers. I mean, getting with council and seeing what they can do to adjust, I mean, laws, to adjust park rules. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, but we can only enforce what we can enforce. But I hear you. It's frustrating. And unfortunately, you're not the only park and not the only place that has it. It's spreading. And it's frustrating because there's a lot of times that we feel helpless as well. Like, what more can we do? But again, we're just one piece of the cog, and we're happy to be a part of the planning, the decision, and coming up with the answer. But it's not law enforcement, as for so long was thought to be the answer. And I think this part realizes it's the community is the answer, and how can we all work together for the betterment? Excuse me. So
Justin from Homeless Protocol were there, and he said two of the people were known to him, and that they had housing vouchers, but they had been in housing and they used fentanyl while they were in the provided housing, and so he had to kick them out. Faith Lutheran, when I went over to talk to the principal over there, she had three homeless people hanging out in her office to kind of get cool and giving them water and food. And I asked them, two of them said they were on disability, were getting disability checks. And I said, well, why don't you get an apartment? Oh, we don't know how to budget our money. I was like, oh, gosh, I've just got to be quiet and leave now. anyway, so yeah, it just obviously that's frustrating. And I thought maybe since you had been here, there were newer, different ideas.
There's tons of resources, and again, this was primarily a law enforcement convention and how they can work, and they talked a lot about partnering with people, and this is a perfect example of, again, we come to the table just as this. You get this many people in a room from different entities and say, here's the problem, how can we fix it? And police play a specific role, but then there's the homeless outreach, there's through the city, there's, you know, food, there's all this stuff, housing vouchers, all that, and some people you just can't fix. I mean, that's, you can give them everything, and they're like, you know what? I enjoy living at the park. I don't have to pay bills. I don't have this. It's like, wow, that's not for me, but God bless you that you're happy with it. Could you mind just not being here? You know, sometimes it's moving. It's, there's so many different things, but, you know, from my experience in being there is understanding that law enforcement isn't, and people turn to us, but it's like, no, bring the community together, the partnerships with all the hard work and trust and relationship building, and hopefully we can help your community, as long with tons of others in this town, to help get some resources available and see where we're best met to not only put a Band-Aid on it, but hopefully fix the problem. And there's a lot of, we're at the start. We're definitely by no means there, but we're, compared to the rest of the nation, we're heading in the right direction. Just don't know where the end is yet.
Yeah, well, you know, again, the email went to Justin, and thank you, Carlos. Yes, housing.
Just homeless protocols. People suffer from so much stuff that we do not. You could have this many homeless people in a room, and they each suffer from something different.
Sure. No,
we have no clue. We have no clue. I've tried.
Why would you choose to be out here?
I went to housing. Hey, bro, you want to go get free this? Blah, 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 blah. He goes, no. He goes, I would just appreciate it if you give me $5 so I can get a beer. I'm fine otherwise. And he sounded perfectly fine. And normal. And I said, well, if I wasn't working, I'd give you the money, but I'm working right now. I really would. And there's just so many different problems, and it's usually mental.
Sure.
And like you said, they have vouchers. They have all this assistance, but they can't. They don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
They don't.
Addiction.
And it's not even those who have addiction. It's those who need the pills to keep their mind straight. It's those who don't use what they're supposed to use. It's not all addiction. It's not all fentanyl. It's not all anything in one thing. It's everything.
I spend a lot of time with the homeless population. As the IPA, they're a very vulnerable group to and susceptible to police abuse if that would happen. And for years, once or twice a month, the weekends I come out. And you said, why would anybody choose that? And I gave up asking that question about a year and a half.
It's not a choice.
It's not worth it.
It's not a choice.
You explain what there is, and you offer them, you know, lead a horse to water kind of expression. They know these things are there. It's what they want to do. It's not what I would choose, but it's what they're choosing. So we can do. Ask a question. You're served by Hardesty Center, substation on 22nd Albert, right?
Am I near there?
That's your location for this area?
It is, yeah.
Okay. So, I've explained this before, but let me tell you again, especially now. There's something called DAC, D-A-C, stands for Division Advisory Council. Okay? And every substation is headed up by a captain. Right? One of the captain are lieutenants and sergeants and your officers and such. So that's the command structure. And four times a year, that substation will open up. The captain will have an open house, bring in the community, and say, at first they do a little hello introduction, and then they'll go into some specific concerns and needs and explain to you some of the things they've had to go through, some of the cases they've had, what some of their statistics are. And then they'll end it with an open forum for anybody that's there, because the community is welcome. And that you go in and you tell them your concerns. And, you know, since now you're tied in with all of those neighborhood associations, that's perfect. Because they're not calling downtown and telling somebody who doesn't live there. And, you know, they're going to care because they're cops, right? But are they going to care more if they're in that area? Likely. Yeah, it didn't make sense to me. So when you go to this DAC and you have that opportunity to directly address the captain who oversees that substation that handles your area, they're very, very accommodating. And you've got like the neighborhood crime sergeant that will say, well, and I've seen the police immediately get on things that are brought up. And I'm going to tell you that the DAC, and they're held quarterly, so once every 4 months. Your next one's going to be after the first of the year because you've got a brand new captain.
Well, Captain Kidd was at my last meeting 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
3 weeks ago.
You want to get on the DAC.
So he heard it all.
What, historically, that substation has had the absolute worst attendance of any substation. The worst. I've been there when it was two people. And that's just, I don't understand that. You know, maybe TBD needs to make more of an effort or maybe people just aren't caring as much. But, you know, you've got a lot of businesses in that area that have concerns about homeless. I don't know why they're not there. You've got neighbors that are concerned about it. So what I'm going to suggest to you is if you want to get on and tell everybody who comes to this meeting, if you've got that many people's ears, wow, you should take advantage of that. And they need to contact the substation and tell them, I want to get on the email list to be told when the next DAC meeting is. It's 2.5 hours, 2 hours. Sometimes they water, sometimes they don't, but it's open. And you go in, it's the best opportunity you'll have to directly address somebody for police needs.
This is I'm in the past, and I will ask Lieutenant Brian, because I see him once a month, so I'll encourage more people to come to that.
There was a model.
Get on the mailing list, the email list. I mean, that's, you know, you could suggest that, but they send out a big blast to everybody that expresses an interest. And you can get that through calling the operations division Midtown.
Okay.
Back in the 90s.
Thank you.
When it was a real busybody in the neighborhoods, I was part of the sort of pioneer group of SNAP. And I don't know if SNAP is still active because I...
Not that I'm aware.
But you were familiar with the name, right? Which is, okay, so SNAP back in the day was the Southside Neighborhood Association Presidential Partnership. Okay. So it was all of us under Steve Leal, but it was a coalition of presidents of the neighborhoods in that area. And that was a very effective way to have the representation of the leadership of the neighborhoods who then met regularly with the, so we were on the DAC. SNAP would come to the DAC, so they had the ears. And there was a lot of similarities with what was happening with the neighborhoods in that area, obviously, right? But that was a really effective model. I don't know if that's an opportunity for your sort of neighborhood area presidents to have their own committee group.
And there's something called TRIG, and we can talk about that after.
Yeah.
And I'll connect you to TRIG, but it's what you're speaking
about. Yeah.
The city will send out a blast to all registered neighborhood associations. I don't know if that's the same thing. Problem they've had. I don't remember who. Carlos, was that the community development? I don't remember who that's on.
CNN. It was prior.
But the problem now
neighborhood service.
Is that neighborhood associations are not keeping up on current presidents or vice presidents or secretaries, usually the secretaries.
So they used to have so much support from the city, but then all kind of...
Rebecca Roop, just one person is trying
to... So they send these blasts out that get lost in cyberspace. So it's an antiquated system. It's not well maintained. If you want to make an effort to have that brought back up and make it accurate now, that's something you might want to think
of. The city's super busy, but I do know that... there's so many different groups, but prior to me getting there, because I was in code enforcement, prior to even that, I think, community services or whatever its name was back then, because it's got just so many different needs, had a lot more control about with the neighborhoods and the associations and the names and the leaders and everything.
Yeah, you would
they
take
would,
your
they would go
your,
there.
You would take your flyers and they would send them out.
They would print them out.
You would
send
match
them.
Your listserv.
I have this. From this has nothing to do with it. I have this great map of the West Side with all the different barrios names. It came out in something that the city produced.
Yeah.
And I framed that sucker because it's just super badass. Mm-hmm.
You'd be willing to do it if you want to stay up. I mean, it's not a law enforcement thing.
Yeah,
so
it's
a super position, but I think
Usually before my time off.
Do you want your card then?
And do you have the...
Terrific. Okay.
I'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So item number 9, CPAR vacancies. We're still missing Ward 1 and Ward 2. I'm not sure how that's progressing, if anything was said during a their council meeting. You've heard anything?
A pitch is being made for Mr. Flannery in one of those wards.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we hope that something fruitful comes of that.
Okay, terrific. Glad to hear about that. And item number 10, future agenda items. You had mentioned bringing the captains. So maybe they come down and they speak about their divisions and any particular issues that they might have in their division that would be relevant for us to hear about, you know.
Absolutely.
And it is. Anything else for the good of the cause?
Would you like to? You want to get back to us on the captain's presentation, and you want to try to go for next month, though?
Or once you let Captain here explore that, because everybody's got crazy schedules, and they may not know anything about CPAR. So instead of you got brand new captains, right? Okay. So instead of committing for next month, leave it open and let Captain Mayfield explore that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm pretty confident.
Yeah, really. No.
Wrangle them?
To beat up my peers, so I can have them here next month.
Okay.
That's right.
A representative from the division.
Okay, yeah. Be interested to hear what's going on. It's 3 divisions with new captains, guys.
Yes. Captain Belinda Morales arrived on the east side. She replaced me in the city of Brigham.
No, this is ODS.
Yes.
Yeah. Be interested to hear what's going on and if there are specific issues in different divisions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. You know, as CPAR folks, you're not limited to the ward that appointed you. So if you'd like to go to a DAC meeting in the South Side and you weren't appointed by a South Side council member, go to the DAC meeting.
You're
going to do 4 of them a year.
Oh, my God. The enthusiasm.
Each presentation on what's going on in the South Side, go to their DAC meeting. And the way to know that is I can bring that to you or contact each division and say, put me on the email blast. So, part of what you're tasked with is dealing with police community liaison, right? And so they're not breaking down your door to come here. So go out to where they are is what I would suggest to you. And then that would be at the DAC meeting.
All right. It is 6:40. So we will adjourn. We'll see you all next month.
All right.
That's what I said about
future. We live on the same street.
And Brandon.
At
the conference.
After a while, I went to theater at the conference.